we're going to make sure that every vote is counted. Every single vote.
Every vote?
Every vote gets counted.
Glad to hear it. Good luck with that.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, in Eugene on KEPW, and in Cottage Grove on Queso, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, Columbus, Ohio's WGRN, in Palinville, New York on WLPP, Grand Rapids, Michigan's WPRR, in New Orleans on WHIV, Gallup, New Mexico's KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, Seattle's KODX, Red Bluff and Redding, California's KFOI, Round Mountain, California's KKRN, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Workforce Rising, and Detour Talk, Blanketing Planet Earth. 5 days a week, I am Brad Friedman, your friendly, investigative, blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell, if exhausted, fellow from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. It was a very long night last night for both Desi Doyen and myself, but we are hanging in there. Are you hanging in there?
Yes, I believe I still have maybe one or two brain cells still available to rub together.
No, I doubt it. hey, remember that November 7th thing I've been warning about following the November 6th midterms? I've sort of been warning we could be in trouble on November 7th, no matter what happens on November 6th. Well, it could be underway, what I've been warning about. Donald Trump has now fired Attorney General Jeff Sessions just an hour or two ago, paving the way for what could be the dismissal of Special Counsel Robert Mueller, as I suggested was likely to happen if things did not go well for Trump on Election Day.
Yeah, that didn't take long at all.
Well, they didn't go well for Donald Trump on Election Day, I sort of assumed this was going to happen today. Things could have gone worse for Donald Trump, but now we may be about to see the fallout beginning from the midterm elections, which we'll get to in a moment. Jeff Sessions, chief of staff, Matthew Whitaker reportedly becomes the acting AG as of right now, and whether he has the power to fire Robert Mueller and whether he will do so, that remains to be seen. Again, all of this could happen very quickly, even before we're off air today, for all I know.
Buckle up.
In theory, at least, this guy, what's his name, Whitaker, would now take control of the special counsel probe, which had been overseen by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, while Sessions had recused himself given his role in the 2016 Trump presidential campaign. But before I allow Donald Trump to entirely hijack at least this news cycle here on my show, we will get to all of that, I'm sure, as it moves forward. But for now, after a shameful day for, frankly, many election officials and a great day for American voters who overcame odds to simply cast a vote on Tuesday in many areas. Yes, the final vote in Utah, I believe, in Utah, was cast 3 hours after the close of polls in Provo. And voters were still waiting to vote on Nevada's 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems a full 2.5 hours after polls had closed. Nonetheless, the nation managed to finally apply at least some brakes to our out-of-control national emergency following the 2016 election of Donald Trump and the GOP majorities in both houses of Congress. I just want to mention, since I may not get to it, my personal thanks to those of you who suffered through obscenely long lines and other absurd obstacles in order to cast your vote at all on Tuesday or in early voting. It should not be this way. And yes, I will continue to work on it as long as I can. Moreover, my thanks to those of you who served as poll workers, as poll watchers, and other volunteers to try and help democracy work as best as it can under the circumstances on Tuesday. I heard from a bunch of you with varying stories that were both inspirational and horrifying.
Oy.
I'll try to share some of those thoughts if time allows, perhaps in the upcoming days. But for the moment, based on what we know today, the nation decisively rejected Donald Trump and GOP politics, at least in the U.S. House, while reportedly giving up several Senate seats to Republicans in a number of still very Trumpy states. Democrats also won back a bunch of governor's mansions on Tuesday. Some big ones, some surprising ones, while reportedly losing a few heartbreakers, though the vote is still out in some of those races. We'll get to those in a bit as well. There were a bunch of surprises throughout the night, and despite Desi Doyen's grim outlook on life and today, there was a lot of very good news all over the place on Tuesday, at least according to the completely unverified and unofficial election results as of this hour, as reported by computer tabulators in all 50 states, either correctly or incorrectly. So my usual caveat here, these are numbers as reported, but by computers, but verified by no actual human beings at this point. And we'll get, as the days move forward, into some of the concerns about some of these numbers. We'll talk about some of that today as well. But for the moment, I'm just reporting on what we know. And by the way, the analysis, we'll have time for that as well down the road. We'll do some of that today, but mostly this is just what we know at this hour. Let's fly through as much of it as we can today based on what we know and what we don't know after a very long night on Tuesday and into Wednesday morning. All right, let's start with the less good news and we'll build up from there, Des.
So
things will get better by the end of the show.
Okay.
Democrats were not able to take back a majority in the U.S. Senate and, in fact, appear to have lost several seats there, though we did have a surprise victory called late today, which did not look like it was going to be a Democratic win late last night. And we've also got several seats that are still too close to call. But in the U.S. Senate, where Democrats had to defend 10 seats in states that were won by Donald Trump in 2016, with Republicans only needing to defend one state in a state that was won by Hillary Clinton, as of this morning, Democrats received about 12 million more votes nationally in U.S. Senate races. 12 million more votes. So with the Dems winning big in that regard, Republicans picked up, so far, 2 seats, at least. And they could gain another 3 still in the hours and days ahead. Blame our founding fathers for that one and the imbalance built into the U.S. Constitution when it comes to every state receiving 2 U.S. senators, whether it's California out here with a population of nearly 40 million, or North Dakota, or Alaska, which each have a population of about 750,000. In any event, Democrats reportedly lost U.S. Senate seats in, let's see, Indiana. Republican Mike Braun reportedly was unseated by, Republican Mike Braun unseated Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly in Indiana. In Missouri, Republican Attorney General Josh Hawley is said to have unseated Democrat Claire McCaskill in my old home state, which used to be a swing state years ago when I lived there, but it has turned very red ever since I left. So I do blame myself for that. North Dakota Democratic Senator Heidi Heitkamp had hoped to hang on to her seat, but unfortunately, it looks like Republican Kevin Cramer was able to unseat her in that very Republican state, which went to Donald Trump by some 36 points back in 2016. So this is not a complete surprise, but of course it didn't help that thousands of Native Americans were targeted with voter suppression by a GOP law banning voting by those without IDs that have street addresses on them. Tens of thousands of North Dakotans were likely affected by that. How much that played into Heidi Heitkamp actually losing here? Well, we don't know. That remains to be seen. She was on the rocks anyway. It was always a tough climb. Meanwhile, Republicans managed to hang on in Tennessee, where Marsha Blackburn won the Republican seat being vacated by Senator Bob Corker in Tennessee, despite hopes for the former popular Democratic governor Phil Bredesen. Blackburn trounced Bredesen, according to the 100% unverifiable touchscreen systems used in much of the state of Tennessee. She trounced him by some 11 points, even as the polling average in that race leading up to Election Day, it was a toss-up with Blackburn's polling average at just over 5 points above Bredesen. So that margin, at least, is a bit of a surprise, if not the win itself. Then we go down to Texas. And Desi, here's where I blame you instead of me.
I should never have left.
This one is your fault. Ted Cruz reportedly hung on over Beto O'Rourke, beating the congressman by just 3 points in what many Democrats saw as one of the night's biggest disappointments.
Yes, I was very disappointed.
You were one of them.
Well, I
you?
Knew it was a stretch. I knew it was really unlikely, but boy, yeah. There was a part of me that actually dared to hope just for a second there.
Well, you know, really, the polling average is there leading up to that race on Tuesday had Cruz up by almost 7 points. So that was always going to be a tough climb.
Indeed.
And the fact that arguably O'Rourke outperformed much of that polling by coming within 3 points
of
Ted Cruz.
I think that's a big signal that something is changing in Texas.
Something is changing. Not quickly enough, at least on the statewide level. There is some better news in the House in a number of places in Texas. We'll get to that in a second. Meanwhile, sticking to the U.S. Senate here, somehow, Democrats managed to hang on to their Senate seat in Montana. This was a surprise to me, and I was up pretty late last night. But somehow, Senator John Tester, Democrat from Montana, appears to have pulled it out somehow over Matt Rosendale, the Republican there, by a couple of points. That race looked like Rosendale had it in the bag. When I finally called it a night last night, somehow Tester pulled it out today.
Good for Tester.
Reportedly.
Yeah.
Good for Tester. Good news for Democrats in that regard. California, we knew a Democrat was going to win this one, but 85-year-old, five-term incumbent Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein defeated the state's progressive Democratic State Senate President Kevin DeLeon in the top two contest where no Republicans were on the ballot for the U.S. Senate in California on Tuesday. So there, the more conservative Dianne Feinstein probably won a lot of votes from Republicans on Tuesday.
Oh, very likely.
More right-leaning choice. So then there were some Democratic pickups in the Senate. In Nevada, Democrats picked up a Senate seat where Republican Dean Heller was ousted by Democrat Jackie Rosen in that swing state. There's some good Senate news for Democrats there. Still out, however, is the state of Arizona. As of right now, the media have not yet made a call in that contest to fill the seat being vacated by Republican Jeff Flake. Nonetheless, Republican Martha McSally is said to be up by less than 1 point over Democrat Kyrsten Sinema in the otherwise traditionally Republican state, but another state which is moving towards the Democrats. Their governor, their Republican governor, however, won in a landslide on Tuesday. So the fact that Sinema is currently reported to be within about 1 point of McSally, well, it tells us something. They're currently separated by just 16,000 votes out of 1.7 million votes cast. So I know they're dealing with absentees and provisionals, et cetera, today. I will also note here that the Green candidate, who happens to be named Green, Angela Green, she picked up almost 39,000 votes in this race. That is more than enough to have closed the current gap between the two front runners, between the Republican and the Democrat. Though, to Green's credit, she did drop out of the race a week or so ago and endorsed Sinema in the bargain. But it was too late to have her name removed from the ballots at that time, and many early votes had already been cast. An absentee, vote by mail, etc. So just another reason, by the way, that I'm no fan of early or absentee voting if it can be avoided. Because, you know, some of the people who voted for the Green candidate might have thought differently had they waited until Election Day to vote. So we're watching Arizona closely to see what may develop there. In Mississippi, There was a special election on Tuesday night between the appointed Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith and a Democratic challenger, Mike Espy, and two other candidates, another Republican and another Democrat. Neither candidate got more than 50%. So both of those two will advance to a runoff on November 27. Though in the case of Tuesday's election, the hard right Chris McDaniel got about 17% of the vote. And so that will likely go to Republican Hyde-Smith, who is the favorite to win the runoff and retain that seat for Republicans. And then there's Florida.
Florida.
There's always Florida, isn't there? Currently, incumbent Democratic Senator Bill Nelson is said to be 0.4 percentage points behind the termed out Florida governor, Rick Scott. That's about 30,000 votes out of nearly 9 million cast in the Sunshine State. To Senator Nelson's credit, he did not rush to concede on Tuesday night, said that he would seek a recount there. He's entitled to one in the Sunshine State, where an automatic recount happens when the margin is less than 0.5%. As it is now. So we're now at 0.4. As long as it's less than 0.5, he gets an automatic recount. Now, if the margin is actually less than 0.25%, that's a quarter of a percent, then that recount would be a hand recount. However, if it's more than that, but less than 0.5, then it will be computers that were used to tally the paper ballots in the first place. They will be used once again to tally these ballots again in anything that we will euphemistically call a recount in the state of Florida. So we can most likely look forward to that, although the numbers are so close right now at 0.4. That, too, could change before Saturday when the Nelson campaign, when a final decision is made about any such recount. The Nelson campaign is currently scrambling to contact voters whose ballots were not counted due to lack of ID or a matching address, etc. The deadline is noon on Saturday to determine whether there will be a recount. The Democratic election attorney Mark Elias is now representing Nelson and said, "We expect the supervisors, regardless of their party affiliation, to discharge their constitutional duties in a fair manner." Yay, a Florida recount. Just what I was hoping for. But that's better than what we're seeing or apparently getting in the governor's race there. We'll get to that in a little bit. But let's move over to the U.S. House here, where the news was decidedly, markedly better for Democrats, and I would argue for the country as a whole. First, more than 100 women were elected to the U.S. House for the first time ever on Tuesday. That alone is great news for every American, frankly. Democrats so far have reportedly picked up 27 seats in the U.S. House. That is more than enough to take over the majority there and finally apply some brakes to this runaway administration. Some brakes, anyway. Which, frankly, is what I was hoping for as much as anything else in these elections. Democrats will take control of all U.S. House committees. They can begin legitimate investigations of this president and even get access to his tax returns, finally. Oversight will now return to the U.S. House of Representatives, thankfully. There are at least 17 House races left to be called, so that 27-seat pickup could fairly easily rise above 30 seats or more, given the Democrats the opportunity to control the U.S. House of Representatives for the next 2 years. They picked up a lot of seats in swing districts that had been won by Hillary Clinton in 2016, but that was just the leading edge of the wave, really, on Tuesday. The average district nationwide, according to the New York Times, moved 10 percentage points to the left this year. Even in districts that Republicans won, 169 of the Republican districts that Republicans won, 169 of them moved to the left on Tuesday. Now, beyond partisan consideration, as I said, the story of the day was really women and diverse candidates, often diverse women candidates. Among the many notable reported victories on Tuesday, Michigan Democrat Rashida Tlaib in her in the 13th district in Michigan and Minnesota's Ilhan Omar in the 5th Congressional District of Minnesota. They will both become the first Muslim women ever elected to Congress. Omar is also the first Somali-American congresswoman, while Tlaib is the chamber's first Palestinian-American. In Massachusetts, Ayanna Pressley became the first black woman to represent Massachusetts in Congress. Wow, wow, really? Massachusetts? The first? Anyway, that's good news.
Hey, we'll take it.
She will occupy the same seat held by folks like Tip O'Neill and, yes, John F. Kennedy. She'll have JFK's seat in Massachusetts. In Connecticut, similarly, Jahana Hayes will join the freshman class as Connecticut's first black female representative. In Texas, Texas is sending its first ever Hispanic woman to Congress. Veronica Escobar in the 16th Congressional District won Beto O'Rourke's old seat, and State Senator Sylvia Garcia won big in the Houston area, so they'll send two Hispanic women to Congress. In Texas's 7th District, first-time candidate Lizzie Fletcher defeated nine-term GOP incumbent John Culberson near Houston. That was a big pickup in the Lone Star State. See, I told you there was some good news in Texas.
I know.
It wasn't all bad. In one odd reported result that I'm trying to watch here and figure out, on Tuesday night, AP called the election in Texas's 23rd district for incumbent Republican Will Hurd. Yet the AP then retracted their call in the early hours, late hours on in LA time here, early Wednesday morning, as Democrat Gina Ortiz Jones briefly took the lead in that race. And then Hurd took the lead from her again. So the race is now considered to be too close to call. Hurd is leading by 0.3 percentage points. When I last checked, that's 0.3. That is less than 700 votes out of more than 200,000 votes cast. Along the southern Texas border from El Paso down to San Antonio. Ortiz Jones, by the way, is an Iraq War veteran, former intelligence official. Hurd is a first-term Texas congressman in a district which has gone back and forth between Democrats and Republicans now over the past decade or more. So we're watching that. Could be a Dem pickup. Maybe not. Maybe it's a Republican hold. In Texas 32, this is not a woman, but speaking of Texas, African-American Democrat Colin Allred unseated 8-term Republican Pete Sessions.
Yay!
In Dallas.
Yes, I am glad to hear that.
Well, you don't like Dallas?
Not a big fan of Pete Sessions.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, he is out, it looks like. In Kansas, Sharice Davids. And in New Mexico, Deb Haaland. They both won their races to become the first Native American women in Congress. Davids racked up another distinction as the first openly LGBTQ person to represent, yes, Kansas. That was hardly the only good news for Kansas, but I'm getting ahead of myself here. In New York's 14th district, of course, progressive Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, as expected, won her seat. She, at 29 years old, earns the spot as the youngest woman ever elected to Congress. That after unseating longtime senior Democratic leadership member Joe Crowley in the 14th Democratic district primaries earlier this year. And in Iowa, though a few months older than Ocasio-Cortez, just a few months older, Abby Finkenauer of Iowa's 1st District, along with fellow candidate Cindy Axne in the 3rd District, they both won the distinction of being the first women that Iowa has ever sent to the U.S. House.
Wow. The first women ever for Iowa to send? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so those were both Democratic pickups, leaving white nationalist Congressman Steve King in Iowa as the only Republican among Iowa's 4-person congressional delegation. In Illinois, Democrat Lauren Underwood unseated 4-term Republican Randy Hultgren in a suburban district west of Chicago. Yes, the infamously Republican DuPage County. In Florida, a bit of a surprise, Democrat Debbie Mercosal Powell defeated incumbent Carlos Curbelo in South Florida. Thank you. So that was a bit of a surprise. And speaking of surprises, in Oklahoma, deep in the heart of Oklahoma, a Democratic takeover in Oklahoma City. Kendra Horn ousted Steve Russell. Nobody apparently saw that one coming. It's the first Democrat in 40 years since 1975 for the U.S. House in Oklahoma. Trump won that district by 13 points. So that was a big move. That was a big shift to the left in the middle of so-called red Oklahoma. Bad news for women here, perhaps, though it depends how you look at it. Certainly good news for Democrats. After the Republican nominee Katie Arrington turfed out Republican Appalachian Trail hiker Mark Sanford, Governor Mark Sanford, in the GOP primary, Arrington went on to lose on Tuesday night, to lose the district to Democrat Joe Cunningham. And then there's a couple of races that are still out before we get to the break here. Well, at least one that is still out. Maybe some good news here for Democrats. I'll believe it when this is finalized. But apparently, Democrat Lucy McBath in Georgia's 6th District, her son was killed by gun violence 6 years ago, which I believe is what led her to decide to run
for Congress. Yeah. Yes.
She appears to be winning at this hour, in any event, over Republican Karen Handel, former Secretary of State of Georgia, in the 6th District, that's Atlanta and its suburbs. The race had some very funky numbers at the Georgia Secretary of State website last night, but is now currently showing McBath ahead of Handel. Barely. Looks like McBath has 50.46%. Handel at 49.54%. Now, there's only two people in that race, so there won't be a runoff, but boy, is that close. Less than 3,000 votes out of more than 300,000 votes cast in the district that Handel won barely last year over Democrat John Ossoff in that much watched U.S. House election in Georgia. Those numbers could still change, so I'm watching them closely. finally, here in Georgia 7, next door, it was called for Democrat Carolyn Bordeaux by the media over the incumbent Republican Rod Woodall, but then it was uncalled. This is Tuesday night, after what officials described as a data entry error. Okay. Remember, this is in Georgia, where they use 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems on Election Day. Not clear what the error is exactly, but I know that folks on the ground are looking at this very closely today, including some of the screenshots that I captured last night from the Georgia Secretary of State website on that race and on Handel's race, and posted to Twitter last night if you want to give them a look. No time for details right now, but the results in Georgia 7 went from 0% reporting, even with more than 200,000 votes reportedly cast at that time. I was looking at the results, to suddenly 2 minutes later jumping to 50% reporting in about 2 minutes' time, and then to 100% reporting less than an hour or so later. So I'm trying to figure out what all went there. And if I can learn anything substantive over the coming days, we will cover it, of course, on future broadcasts. And I, like I said, I know that there are people looking into those numbers to see what, if anything, can be learned. But right now, the incumbent Republican is said to be in the lead. Unless something changes there, we'll let you know if it does. All right, a quick break, and we are back with some really big news out of Georgia and elsewhere, and some still outstanding questions in a number of governor's races across the country, where there was a bunch of interesting Democratic pickups. Much more straight ahead on the broadcast as our national emergency, maybe, we'll see, for now, slows down just a bit, at least I hope. I'm Brad Friedman. Welcome back to the Bradcast, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I offered my caveat in the previous segment that these are numbers we're talking about today as reported by computers in all 50 states and verified by absolutely nobody at this point. But I should also offer my caveat that sometimes, that I always offer, sometimes it takes a while for problems to emerge in these results. With the way that votes are counted and not counted, et cetera. So we are barely getting started on that score, I suspect, today, the day after the critical, crucial 2018 midterm elections began to put at least some curbs on our national emergency. All right, we've hit the Democratic pickup of control of the U.S. House and the GOP expanding their majority by at least two states, maybe more, we'll see, in the U.S. Senate. Let's talk some governor's race, shall we, Desi Doyen?
Yes, please.
There was some unqualified great news for Democrats, and again, I would argue for Americans overall, as Democrats managed to pick up seven seats from Republicans and in some very key states, not just for this election, but key states looking out over a decade for reasons I'll explain in a moment. The Daily Beast's Sam Stein observed last night on Twitter that Democrats won governor seats in Michigan and Wisconsin and trounced in Pennsylvania, three states, all three states that played, as he said, an outsized role in Trump's 2016 triumph.
That would be understating it a little
bit. Yes, very nice way to put it. So let's start in Wisconsin, the most notable win, I think, among at least those three states, was the wildly corrupt Republican governor Scott Walker being denied a third term in a very close race, as Democratic state school superintendent Tony Evers edged out Walker in the Badger State by about 1.2 percentage points, just over 30,000 votes out of 2.5 million votes cast. Barring any surprise news from, say, Waukesha County in the next day or two, yes, we have seen that happen before, as some of you may remember, it looks like this is a huge win for Democrats in the state that both began the union movement and then began to try to pound several nails into its coffin under Walker's reign and complete control, Republican control of that state. So this is big. In addition to stripping public union members of collective bargaining rights, you'll remember GOP control of that state also resulted in extreme partisan gerrymandering at both the House and state legislative levels. That can now begin to finally roll back. I should add, unconstitutional gerrymandering that should have resulted in redrawn maps, but for our stolen U.S. Supreme Court. In any event, that all can now begin to roll back with the veto power of the governor, of the new governor incoming, Tony Evers, after the 2020 census. So this win in Wisconsin was important not only to Wisconsin, but to the U.S. House and therefore the entire country as of the 2022 elections and then for the next decade. Yes, elections have consequences.
Very long-term consequences.
Yeah, in this case. A lot of these, Wisconsin is notable, but several Democratic pickups for governor races will have big consequences for the redistricting coming up after the 2020 census. Another such state is Michigan, and another important victory in advance of the next round of redistricting. Following the disastrous reign, and that's also a nice way to put it, of Republican Governor Rick Snyder up there in Michigan, Democrat Gretchen Whitmer has defeated Bill Schuette to turn Michigan blue after 8 horrible years for that state. So there's some good news, again, for all of us. And then there's Florida.
Oh, Florida.
Always Florida. Here, another big disappointment for many. Very Trumpy Republican Congressman Ron DeSantis reportedly defeated Andrew Gillum, barely, by just at this hour 0.6, a sixth of a percentage point, at least as of right now. Now, remember, automatic Florida recount kicks in at 0.5%. margin. So I'm not sure why Gillum seemed in such a rush to concede on Tuesday night before the race was even called by the media, especially with Amendment 4 winning on the Florida ballot by some 30 points. That will reenfranchise some 1.5 million former felons in the state. But if which is huge on its own right. But if that one, if that measure won something like 65 to 35, is it possible that Gillum, who was very popular and very close, a dead heat essentially with Rick Scott, is it possible that Gillum could lose the way that he did? Well, maybe, but I, for one, would like to know for sure. And yes, it's a very expensive state to recount, as some of you may remember, and a very difficult state to recount, sadly. But I'm sure with all the money spent on this governor's race in Florida that Americans would be more than happy to have kicked in as much as was needed to properly count the state by hand, if possible. Still, whether Gillum conceded or not on Tuesday night, an automatic machine recount could still kick in if the margin continues to drop in that race as ballots are canvassed. And those who were turned away for lack of ID or other reasons see those problems cured, potentially, as Senator Bill Nelson's campaign is attempting to find such voters in their planned recount for the U.S. Senate against termed-out Governor Rick Scott. So I'm sure Gillum is watching this very closely, but that's where that stands right now. Rick Scott could be the next, Ron DeSantis could be the next governor of the great state of Florida. In Kansas, some much better news. And I think Thomas Frank is going to have to rewrite his, write a new book. He wrote What's the Matter with Kansas?
What's going better with Kansas now, maybe?
Well, yeah, I think he could write What's the Matter with Florida? What's the Matter with Texas? But yeah, good news for Kansas. Laura Kelly, the Democratic candidate, defeated two-term Secretary of State and longtime GOP voter fraud fraudster Chris Kobach, who listeners to Brad the Bradcast and readers of the Brad blog know exactly who this clown is. Kelly defeated Kobach pretty handily to become the next governor of Kansas. She beat him by almost 5 points. And that was with left-leaning independent candidate Greg Orman in the race, winning 6.5% of the vote. So Kobach just got destroyed, really. This is a huge Democratic pickup, a great win for Kansas, which has been ravaged by the policies of former Republican Governor Sam Brownback. His Reaganomics tax cuts, which failed miserably, devastated the state's infrastructure and education system. Our friend Ari Berman over at Mother Jones was similarly delighted, tweeted out last night, the nation's top vote suppressor just lost. Ernie Canning, the legal advisor over at bradblog.com, said, I guess it's Chris Kobach's turn to get out of Dodge.
Oh, wow.
Because, of course, Dodge City, yes. Kansas, which had its own vote suppression going on under Chris Kobach's reign. It was for naught. Sorry, Chris. Looks like you lost anyway. He lost by about 5 points. No doubt, of course, due to all of that voter fraud that he pretended existed in the state of Kansas. While 8 years as Secretary of State there, but miraculously being unable to find almost any of it in all of those 8 years in office in Kansas. Huh, it's almost as if he was making stuff up. Okay, then there's Georgia, where the mantle for the nation's top vote suppressor this year, at least, must go to Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brian Kobach, who was overseeing his own election for governor, just like Kobach, over Democrat Stacey Abrams. That race remains uncalled by the media at this hour as Kemp leads Abrams by about 2 points, but he is just over 50%. He's got 50.3% as of now in a three-person race for governor, which means if that number comes down under 50%, it'll result in a runoff in December. So we will do all of this over again in early December. Last night, actually, early Wednesday morning at this point, in a barn burner speech that would have been nice to see from Andrew Gillum in Florida, frankly, Abrams, a longtime voting rights advocate herself, vowed that she would not quit until every vote was counted. Currently, Kemp is just over 10,000 votes above that 50% mark. With absentees, including inappropriately rejected absentees and provisionals, still being tallied in this race where Brian Kemp has taken extraordinary measures to suppress the African American vote, like I have never seen in my lifetime, frankly. Anyway, here's Abrams on election night vowing to make sure every vote is counted.
Democracy only works when we work for it, when we fight for it, when we demand it. And apparently today, when we stand in lines for hours to meet it at the ballot box, that's when democracy works. But I'm here tonight to tell you, votes remain to be counted. There are voices that are waiting to be heard. Across our state, folks are opening up the dreams of voters in absentee ballots, and we believe our chance for a stronger Georgia is just within reach. But we cannot seize it until all voices are heard. And I promise you tonight, we're going to make sure that every vote is counted. Every single vote. Every vote can count. Because I'll tell you this, in a civilized nation, the machinery of democracy should work for everyone everywhere, not just in certain places and not just on a certain day.
Boy, I can't tell you how long I have waited to hear that from a candidate on election night.
Indeed.
In a very close race. Stacey Abrams vowing to count every vote. Now, Georgia voters, her campaign is trying to get out the word. If you voted using a provisional ballot in Georgia Or if you had any trouble voting, they're asking you to call immediately to the Voter Protection Hotline. Here's the phone number, 888-730-5816. 888-730-5816 if you voted provisionally in the state of Georgia in order to confirm that your vote was properly counted. So that fight's going to continue, I think, at least for a while in Georgia. We will see. There is also more unquestionably good news for Democrats in governor's races from Tuesday. In Nevada, Democratic County Commissioner Steve Sisolak has triumphed in his bid to become Nevada's next governor, the first Democrat to do so in nearly 20 years. He defeated Adam Laxalt, who was targeted by his own family. 12 members of his own family wrote a blistering op-ed begging Nevada voters to not vote for Laxalt. Well, they didn't.
Good.
And Sisolak reportedly defeated Laxalt by just under 5 points. In Illinois, Democratic billionaire, I know he's a millionaire, he's a billionaire, I think he's a billionaire, J.B. Pritzker. He won for Illinois governor, flipping that state blue by ousting Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. In Colorado, Jared Polis, also maybe a wealthy billionaire or millionaire. He looks like wins in Colorado. He will become the first openly gay male governor. In New Mexico, Michelle Lujan Grisham, Democrat, defeated Republican Steve Pierce to turn New Mexico blue after the reign of an unpopular Republican governor there. And in Maine, oh, hooray. No longer will Maine have the nation's dumbest governor in history. Republican Governor Paul LePage will be replaced by Janet Mills, a woman nonetheless. A Democratic woman at that.
You go, girl.
She defeated Republican Sean Moody and Independent Terry Hayes. It was three-way races like that which resulted in LePage winning twice up there in Maine. But this time it looks like the Democrat won decisively with more than 50% of the vote, I do believe. And finally, before we get to a break here, out here in California, no real surprise, but Gavin Newsom will be the next governor of the great state of California here. I didn't talk about the race much, but I just want to note, I like Newsom a lot for a lot of reasons. I think he's an unsung hero for what he did as mayor in San Francisco when he began allowing same-sex marriages before really anyone in the country, saying, I read the Constitution, there's nothing that bars me from doing this. Personally married people on the city hall steps. I thought that was very brave. I've met him a couple of times. I think he's a great progressive. We'll see if he ends up serving that way.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a very talented administrator, I have to say, and when it comes to government. So we'll see if that plays out as governor of California.
Or
it's a big state.
We'll turn around and start beating him up, as we enjoy doing all the time.
Or both.
Yeah. All right. Some good news there as well for Democrats. All right. Quick break. Come back with some ballot measures and some various miscellany that is also good news, I think, for all Americans. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast.
You can't count on me like one, two, I'll be there. And I know when I need
told you we'd be
it,
here.
I can count on you.
My thanks, by the way, to those of you who helped the Bradcast stay on the air, helped us make it through until Election Day, as we asked you at the beginning of this year. We made it just barely with the help of those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate. We will continue to be here, if we can, with your help, as the fight continues for every last vote in this country in this critical 2018 election. All right, very quickly, a few minutes we got left. Let me hit some of the ballot measures that were also big news. Oh, welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. All right, big news. I mentioned In the previous segment, huge news, frankly, for Florida and for the country. Amendment 4 has passed in the state of Florida by, like I said, something 65 to 35, restores voting rights for former felons who served their sentence. Florida was only one of, I think, two, maybe three states left who did this. I think two. This is going to have a huge impact on elections, or at least it could, in the state of Florida, with some 1.5 million Floridians who were barred from voting now being allowed to vote. That includes one in five African Americans in Florida who just got their voting rights back. Big news, good news in Florida. Mostly good news, I guess, with one amendment that won 61 to 39 in Florida. Voters on Tuesday banned both offshore drilling, that's the good news, and indoor vaping in the state in the same
the same amendment. Yes, they bundle them in weird ways.
Good news for the environment, bad news for people trying to give up smoking. Florida, Jesus. All right, well, you take the bad with the good, I guess. In North Carolina, some good news. Voters rejected the amendment that would have given lawmakers the dominant role over the governor in filling judicial vacancies. This scheme they had to try to change the way the Board of Elections were made up there, taking away power from the Democratic governor and giving it to the Republican legislature. Also, a Democrat won for the Supreme Court in North Carolina, defeating two Republicans who were on the ballot because the Republican vote was split because Republicans tried to get really clever and things blew up in their face. They wanted to force judicial candidates to put their party affiliations on the ballot, thinking that a whole bunch of Democrats would get in this race for Supreme Court and would split the vote. But instead, there was only one Democrat got in and two Republicans, which split the vote. So I think now Democrats may have the Supreme Court majority in the in North Carolina by something like 5-2, if I'm remembering correctly. All of this is going to be bad news for North Carolina Republicans who hope to continue their outrageous gerrymandering over the next decade. That all looks like it's going to be, there is a better chance to stop it now than there was before, that's for sure. That said, the bad news, a voter ID amendment has passed in North Carolina. That was expected, despite it being struck down repeatedly as unconstitutional under state law. So, again, the bad with the good. In Colorado, redistricting reform has passed. Speaking of gerrymandering, that passed big time. So there will be an independent commission there. Also in Michigan, Missouri, Utah, I believe they all adopted new schemes to avoid partisan gerrymandering in those states. That's good news. Let's see, what else do we have here? Michigan and Nevada. Oh, both those states adopted automatic voter registration. In Missouri and Arkansas, minimum wage increase was approved in both of those states. It's going to go up to $11 an hour in Arkansas, $12 an hour in Missouri. Very popular, but not popular enough to apparently to put Claire McCaskill over the top in her Senate race in Missouri. Idaho has expanded Medicaid with 62% of the vote after Republicans have been blocking that for years in the state. That will cover some 62,000 people who did not have health care before. Similarly, in Nebraska, that initiative passed, and 90,000 people will now gain health coverage as a result, despite the Republican lawmakers who have been trying to block this. So good news there for voters as well. In Michigan, I know we've got just another minute here. Jocelyn Benson became the Secretary of State of Michigan, a Democrat. Maybe they can clean up some of the mess when it comes to voting in that state. Kim Davis, the Kentucky County Clerk, who was jailed over refusing to issue marriage licenses, she has been turfed out. She lost. A couple of folks under indictment won. Republicans, Chris Collins, who was arrested and charged in August with wire fraud, conspiracy, and lying to the FBI. Congressman in New York, he won despite those charges. Duncan Hunter, who was charged with some 60 counts of fraud out here in California, he also won anyway. And of course, the Texas Attorney General, the top law enforcement official in the state of Texas, Ken Paxton, charged with 3 felony counts of securities fraud. He too was reelected. So there's that. Dems won control of at least 5 GOP-held legislative chambers, the New Hampshire House and Senate, the Minnesota House, the New York Senate, Colorado Senate. Also, they won seats in the formerly tied Connecticut Senate. They also managed to break the Republican supermajorities in both the State House and State Senate in North Carolina. I meant to mention that. So more good news for North Carolina. Finally, our friend and election integrity champion, Gene Kaczmarek, out in DuPage County, Illinois, the very right-wing suburbs of Chicago. We had her on the show just a week or so ago. She won her race to become county clerk out there. She tells me today that she is the first Democratic candidate to win in a countywide race in DuPage in a century and a half or something.
Oh, awesome.
But she notes she's not only a Dem, she is a progressive, and she will now be the county clerk in DuPage County, Illinois. Good
Yay.
News for voters, I hope. Good luck, Gene. You're going to need it. That's it. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks and the Twitters. I hope you will follow me there as things continue to move forward, where I am simply The Brad Blog. And that's it. Thanks again to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on the air and fight this good fight. Couldn't do it without you. All right, we made it. The fight continues. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.